This is a Defocus Media production.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the 2020 podcast, Canada's number one optometry podcast. I am your host, Dr. Harbir Sayan. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me here, guys. I'm super excited. I am here in Quebec City for the 38th Congress of Canadian Association of Optometry. And we are here at the conference. As you can see, if you're watching on YouTube, there's lots of people behind us. I didn't really plan this as well as I thought I had. There's a lot more noise than I was expecting, but we will speak loudly and clearly, and I'm sure you'll be able to hear us just fine. And before we get started, I want to say a big thank you to Hoya Vision Care Canada for supporting this interview. And this is one of four interviews that we're doing on the topic of myopia management. So thank you to Hoya Vision Care Canada for your support in this topic and bringing this education and this insight to the audience, to our audience and our colleagues who are watching and listening. And today I have a master in myopia management, Dr. Devin Trishak, who is an optometrist, a clinic owner based in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, and he's the owner of Family Focus Eye Care, which is a big optometry practice, seven doctors, and Devin himself is specializing in myopia management. And he's gonna bring us now, the first interview that we did with Dr. Gary Matter on this topic was more of a introductory conversation. You know, how can we get into myopia management? Why is it important for us to think about it differently? And today with Dr. Trishak, we're going to go a little deeper. We're going to talk about more from an expert's perspective. You know, what are the treatments? How should we be applying them? And, you know, how should we be differentiating ourselves, our practices using myopia management? So, Devin, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Harbir. This is great.
Yeah, my pleasure. I forgot to mention, Gary, who was on, is a father of three, as am I, and Devin is a father of four. So he's
one better.
I got to call my wife. No, I think we're good at three. Devin's lovely wife, Jen, is here as well. And she's an optometrist as well. She's going to be in the background kind of like talking to us and like saying, you know, don't talk about that. Or calling Devin out when he's, you know, when he's off base a little bit. You know what? I think that the number one thing is, Devin, we both speak on this topic. You know, we lecture on it. We talk to our colleagues about myopia management. The number one thing is, I feel like we are trying to encourage our colleagues to have a bit of a mindset shift.
Definitely.
And what would you say, you know, as far as looking at myopia, what is it that we need to look at differently?
Yeah, well, in the past, as we all know, myopia has been mainly just refractive error and correcting someone to see well. But as you bring in the axial length side of it and that eye just getting larger and larger, it's more those long-term ocular health risks. So that's where it is. Yeah, that mindset, like you said, is just kind of shifting that myopia is more looked at as a disease. And I'd agree with that it is a disease. And it is that eye gets larger and larger, becomes fragile. You run into those ocular health risks when you're older. Those risks just keep increasing. And the distance blur is just kind of a side effect of that you manage and you help them to see well and function. But it's more just the eye getting bigger. That's kind of the issue.
Right. Yeah. Interesting way to look at it. The distance blur is actually a secondary thing. If you almost think about it, myopia is a disease, not just a refractive condition, like you just said. And I think that when you flip that switch, and in my case anyway, you look at this child, 7, 8, 9-year-old child in front of you, and you say, oh, you have a disease. I have to look at that person differently. It's like one of those things you can't unsee once you've seen it, I feel like. You know, and obviously, you're going to treat that child differently, knowing that they have a progressive condition. And knowing that we now have some tools that we're going to talk about, tools and treatment options available to us to help slow down that progression of that disease and hopefully reduce the impact of that disease on that child's life, I think it's really important. So tell me about what you do right now in your practice as far as myopia management. Which of the different treatment options you prescribe?
So mainly I'd say I do a little bit of everything and have probably started with Ortho-K maybe 7, 8 years ago was where I first got into it. And that was what we had at the time. Okay. But then these last 5, 6 years, we've seen good soft contact lens options, atropine. Now with the Hoya MyoSmart in the last 3 years, good spectacle options. It was kind of the last piece of those different treatment modalities. So yeah, kind of do a little bit of all of those.
Okay.
And yeah.
Is it, how would you, if just roughly you sort of split it up, you're doing sort of like 25, 25, 25, 25, or is it?
I'd say maybe, the fact I started in Ortho-K, I still have a lot of patients that are still there and they're still young myopes at risk. So they're I'd maybe say 50% ortho K, maybe 25% spectacle, 20% soft, a small number of just atropine, but then atropine's kind of sprinkled into the rest of those more in combo treatment, I'd say there is where atropine comes in.
Right. Yeah. So that's a great point to make is like the combination of the treatments, right? And atropine can be used in all of the other three as a combined or additive component. So let's talk about atropine a little bit first, I think, is where I kind of want to start this. Actually, I'll get into atropine, but the mindset part of it and how and when you approach the conversation about myopia management, I think is actually the more important thing to talk about. How early are you getting in there? Is it, you know, and this is a bit of an obvious question or obvious answer for you, but are you getting in there when a child has gone from a minus one to a minus two? Or are we getting in there when they're only a minus a quarter? Or are we getting in there when they're not even minus yet? Like, where does that conversation start?
I'd say as soon as possible, definitely. So I don't think there's two. I have a few kids that are still in low pluses that I put on atropine. And that's like we were chatting about before, the LAMP2 study this past year has shown that, you know, especially those kids are young, that's when they're going to progress the fastest. So, I mean, if you can have an impact then and slow down progression, that's just bodes well for the future that they're not going to, those fastest progressing years, you've slowed them down.
Yeah.
Not a ton of kids am I starting right there. It's usually, you know, kids of Asian background, lower plus than you'd expect, pretty early onset. They're 6 or 7 years old. They've got parents or older siblings that are high myope. So you kind of know they're going that direction. You kind of have a pretty good idea. I think you're,
That's actually
9, 10-year-old that's a plus a quarter, plus 50. I'm probably not too worried just yet, but it's those risk factors that I'm going to say, this kid I'm going to start really early with. So
I like how you put that, those broke down those factors, right? So ethnicity is a factor.
Yeah.
Family history, if the parents or siblings are nearsighted already. Age of onset. And I like how you said less plus than you might expect, right?
Because
I think a lot of us and a lot of our colleagues are looking at how minus are they? How myopic are they? But what if they're not myopic yet, but they're less plus than they should be? What does that look like? Can you give me an example of a child where you're like, they're not yet?
Yeah, that's that term pre-myopia comes in, almost like a pre-diabetic or that type of thing. And there are, we have those age match normals of where they should be of, you know, at age 7, you'd expect a kid to be at plus 0.75 or so. So if they're less than that, then you probably know, okay, they're already on that path of they're progressing and they're moving that direction.
And,
so
in getting comfortable having the conversation at that moment, I think that's an important conversation point here as well, because I know from my conversations with our colleagues that not everybody's ready for that or comfortable with that yet to speak to a parent whose child is a plus a quarter. Your kid's not nearsighted, your kid doesn't need glasses, but
we got to do something.
And so how do you have that conversation, or how would you encourage somebody to start having that conversation with
them? Yeah. So I'd say, I mean, for those couple patients where, you know, you've got all those risk factors, they're going, usually mom and dad are, they're probably tuned into things already. Sure. They were high myopes. Right. I think a big part of it for me is, and again, our office is called Family Focus Eye Care. Usually we've been seeing these patients at our office for a while. You've seen mom and dad as patients, they're myopes. They bring in their kids for their 12-month check or their age 3 check. Hopefully I've planted that seed years ago saying, you know what, mom and dad, you're both nearsighted. We would have touched on, you know, the lifestyle things of making sure we're getting outdoors as your child gets older, making sure they've got a good working distance. And hopefully in years past, I've already said, you know what, there's a good chance your kid might become myopic. Right now they're plus 150, which is fantastic as we ret them at age 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever it is. But then once you do hit that point, then it's kind of an easier conversation. Yeah. I guess if you're starting right there, then it is. It's kind of trying to touch on just that eye is growing and saying, you know what, your kid, let's say they were plus one a year ago and you see them a year later and now they're Plano. You can say, look, your kid moved minus one in that year. We kind of expect that's going to keep going. So whether we start treatment at that point, if those other risk factors are there, maybe we do. Or maybe you're just going to watch that child more closely, but you've already, maybe you've sent mom and dad home with some information. You've started to talk to them about it. You see that kid in 6 months and 12 months and kind of watch them more closely.
I think having that conversation is the most important thing, getting comfortable in speaking with the parents. You know, and understanding that when the first few times we have that conversation, it may not be as streamlined as we'd like it to be. And we'll get pushback from parents, and that's normal. But it'll help us kind of gauge, you know, where people
find what works. And
So, for example, just last week, I had there's two brothers, you know, 8 and 6 roughly, and the 8-year-old is myopic, not that highly myopic, -1 or something, and he's in spectacle correction, you know, with the myopia lens, and his younger brother is like +0.25 at age 6, and his parents, I'm sitting there talking to them, and I was like, well, like, he doesn't need glasses, but I would actually recommend, you know, using atropine because, you know, the studies have shown it helps, but they weren't comfortable with it.
Yeah, and they might not be, and that's, you know what, you've planted that seed again, and then you watch that kid, and see where it goes from there.
Okay with,
you know, sometimes that does take 6 months, 12 months to get there,
But I think one of the things that I often will say is that, you know, it's our obligation to educate in that scenario. It's definitely not appropriate to be like, well, they probably wouldn't want to do it, I won't tell them. Because if they go hear it from somewhere else, first of all, it just doesn't look good on you.
Yeah.
But two, as a medical healthcare provider, we want to make sure we're providing the best information we can to those patients. And if they just decide not to go through with it at that time, that's fine.
Yeah.
The same goes also, we don't do Ortho-K in our office. And I still mention that Ortho-K is an option. I give the exact same amount of information on Ortho-K as I would on a Myosmart or an atropine or whatever. And if the parent decides that Ortho-K is the right way to go, you know, I refer them off to somebody else who does that. And it's just, I think, is a better way to approach it. Let's talk a little bit about, you've already touched on, you know, combined treatments.
Yeah.
You do a lot of Ortho-K. Are there some patients that you have doing doubling up the Ortho-K and atropine or Myosmart and atropine?
Yeah. So I will, usually most patients are going to start, usually they need correction. So they need something to help them see in the distance. Yeah. So that's usually my first line, is to figure out, okay, are we doing spectacles, soft contacts, or Ortho-K? Just because it's going to correct their distance vision, but it's also going to give us that treatment effect. Yeah, kind of starting there. Again, as you kind of build that risk profile for the patient, again, there's a few patients that I've started with combo right off the bat that I've said, you know what, again, parents are high myopes, they're very young, or, you know, all those different things are playing into it, that I'm going to start with peripheral defocus by one of those options and atropine right off the bat. Yeah. But I'd say the majority of patients, I'm starting with Ortho-K, soft contact lenses, spectacles. You kind of know based on their age or even their axial length or that family history, I'll make a note in my chart that, you know, maybe moderate or high risk of fast progression. So may need to add atropine at 6 months or 12 months. As I'm touching on the treatment options with parents too, as you kind of have that risk profile in your mind, you kind of get a good sense of, yeah, this kid's probably just, you know, we put him in glasses, we put him in soft contact lenses, and that's going to be as much as they need, and that one treatment should do a good job.
Right.
Or this is going to be a kid that's probably going to go faster, so you might not be doing combo right now. But you kind of mentioned to mom and dad, if we don't like the results at 6 and 12 months, we're going to slow it down, but it still might go a little faster than we want. Then we can add atropine to this. So almost, kind of getting them ready if you think you might have to go that route.
Yeah.
But I am, you know what I'd say, I'm surprised that sometimes a kid, one treatment I think will work fine for them. They're a kid that's going to progress fast. Right. A kid who I think is going to need two treatments, I start with one and they're fine with that one, and I don't have to add more. So, yeah.
So in most cases, you're starting with one and then adding atropine.
Majority of cases, yeah.
But in the odd case, you're like, this is a very high risk of progression, I'm going to do both.
Yeah. And again, I was going to say, kind of like those young myopic kids or those young low plus kids, usually mom and dad are well-versed on the topic already. Right. They're coming in kind of asking for treatment, so they're ready to go and do as much as they can. So they sometimes even want both right off the bat. They kind of want to do as much as they can immediately. So,
That's fair. And in that scenario, let's say you're doing a Myosmart and an atropine right off the gate. Do you pull the atropine out after a certain point, or have you done that previously?
I'll watch and see how things go. So it's usually those young kids that are, again, they progress the fastest when they're young. So it's kind of those 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds. That's probably the group that I'm going to do combo the most with.
Yep.
I usually give parents a rough idea that I'd say, you know, probably till age 12, we're going to do both, just because this is the time frame when the child's most likely to be progressing the quickest. So we have to be the most aggressive. And then kind of watch what happens as they get to 11 and 12. If their refraction stable and axial length is slowed down and going kind of at a normal rate, then I'd say, okay, we'll look at dropping atropine and then just keep going with glasses. Right. And then similarly, you know, kind of tell them we'll probably do this to age 15, 16, 17, 18. Right. But again, we kind of let the axial length dictate of, are we seeing that plateau naturally? And then we stop treatment, or
Got it.
Yeah.
So you've touched on axial length. Obviously, we know this myopia in general is a concern about axial elongation. And you measure axial length in your office. This is a question that comes up a lot is, should I have a biometer? Should I be measuring axial length? And do I need that? You don't have to answer all these questions right now, but these are the types of questions that come up. Do I need it now if I'm just getting started in myopia management? Or is it something I should get down the road?
Yeah.
How important is axial length measurement? And when did you start to implement that into your practice?
Yeah, so I got an axial length before all the fancy machines came out. So I have a secondhand IOL master that works very well and is very accurate, but it doesn't do all the other fun stuff that the new ones do.
Right.
And it's probably been, maybe 4 years since I've had it. So I was definitely doing myopia management before. So yeah, definitely start now with your myopia patients. Don't wait until you have an axial length device. There's obviously kids that are, they're at risk for fast progression. So start a treatment with them. You don't have to wait. If you enjoy this area and you see yourself doing more and more of it, then definitely, is that budgeting for a device or, kind of looking at it and figuring out, okay, how am I going to work this into getting this into my office? Probably where axial length has helped me the most. And now that I have it, it would be very hard to not have it, is creating that initial kind of your approach or that risk profile initially with a patient.
Right.
And you could be pretty surprised that sometimes a minus one 8 year old is a 23 millimeter eye. Sometimes you get a minus one 8 year old that's a 24 millimeter eye. And so you're going to treat those patients pretty differently just based on how big that eye is to begin with. So you'll be more aggressive with that bigger eye just because we know as you get to that, 25 and a half, 26, that's where those risks for long-term ocular health risks really escalate. So you kind of get an idea of how much room you've got. And again, I think that almost speaks a bit to one treatment versus combo treatment. If it's, a 23 millimeter eye, I've got a lot of room to work with. So maybe we just do one treatment. We say, let's keep that refraction as low as possible as well. But that child's really not at risk of hitting 26 millimeters. Whereas if you're big to begin with, then, I say, okay, I got to be more aggressive with this child. So that's probably the first place where it's nice. The second place where axial length is nice is just as you follow that child, being an objective measure and very accurate to 0.02 millimeters at, kind of five times or more accurate than a refraction, which with kids can be variable as it's not fun to cyclo a kid every 6 months or every year. So that's where, as I brought in axial length and I saw it was accurate, I kind of said, I don't feel like I'm having to cyclo these kids. And really I cycle them usually at baseline and then only if things aren't making sense down the road, but usually axial length gives me a really good idea of how things are going. So
got it. Yeah. So that kind of leads me to the next thing I wanted to ask you, which was like, which measure do you think you maybe rely on more? I imagine it's a combination of things, but do you think it sounds like maybe axial length is going to be more, you have a bit more weight in your decision-making process?
Definitely. Yeah. When I see when they're kind of getting pre-tested and coming to my room, that's the first thing I look at, pull up their axial length today. And then what we've done over the last, 6 months ago, 12 months ago, 18 months ago, and then get an idea of that rate of change and then kind of compare that to, it's nice. We've got almost normal rates of change that a emmetrope would progress at versus what a myopic kid would go at. So you can kind of compare to that and say, is my treatment effective? Do I have to change? Am I happy with it? That type of thing.
Got it. Yeah. Excellent. So that's actually super valuable, I think, looking at it that way. For anybody who is doing myopia management or wanting to get into it, you see the value in having a biometer, something that can measure the axial length because it gives you those extra data points. And like you said, refractions sometimes can be a little unreliable, or like sometimes,
and changing a quarter is
so having that more of a more precise measurement and having the normative data that we can compare to for progression. So clearly there's value in having that and axial length measurement. So when do you actually use that? When do you start to measure axial length on a child that's coming in for their eye exam?
Yeah, so we have a child come in for a routine exam. At that exam, if they're myopic or, kind of going that direction, usually have a quicker conversation with mom and dad about 3 or 5 minutes, just saying, kind of touching on what we talked about, that when we're young, this eye is growing fast. We don't want that eye to grow too quickly, just because structurally it becomes weak and then touch on you. And they'll also get distance blur when that happens. But then we do bring them back for a myopia assessment, which is a longer appointment that we're gonna do. We're gonna cyclo them, axial length, topo imaging, kind of do a little bit more just to get those really good baselines. But that would usually be our first axial length. And then each myope's a little bit different, but at minimum, I'm seeing them every 6 months, so they're going to get an axial length at every visit there. Okay. Some kids you might see sooner if you're, again, probably those faster progressors you're more worried about that you need to watch a little closer, that maybe you're bringing some kids back at 3 or 4 months, but the majority, I'd say, are at 6, and then just doing it each visit. And kind of looking at the, so even 6 month data is sometimes hard to make a decision. It's sometimes not enough time, but then at 12 months, you get a pretty good idea of what's happening over the previous year. And you even sometimes see seasonal changes, just kids being outdoors more in the summer versus indoors, or just the dark that we get in Northern Canada. So I kind of keep that in mind of, okay, this last 6 months was through the winter. When I compare it to 6 months that was through the summer months, sometimes it seems to follow that, sometimes it doesn't, but I don't know if that's definitive, but they've looked at that in studies a little bit too. But
which makes sense. You think there'd be some correlation
there. Yeah.
So you're not doing axial length on every child as part of their routine exam. You're having them come back for a specific myopia workup.
Correct.
And we're going to eventually kind of get into the fee structures and things. We don't have to talk about specific numbers if you don't want to, but I've always wondered about that. Like, should I just be doing, like, I always make analogies to dry eye, right? So we talk about this, like mymography, for example. Should I have patients come back for a dry eye workup and get their mymography done then? Or should we just do mymography on every adult that comes in the door, because then I have the results right there in the exam room to present to them and kind of state my case for why they should get their dry eye treatment done? And I was thinking the same with myopia then. Should we do axial length on every single child?
We've thought about that. Yeah, it is. And I think it'd be awesome to do that. I guess probably a couple of things that have held us back, just being a big office. We've got one axial length device and 3 pretest rooms. So not every kid's going into that room. So it's, sometimes wouldn't allow for it that way. Also, we can't bill for it. So are you charging every patient for it? It's, you know, it's kind of, but again, like you said, do you use it as a screening or something to, as you support your case of your child needs this? I'd say we have pretty good success of, you know, you look at those other risk factors, you talk to mom and dad about it, you present that they need that assessment, and then usually you go forward from there. So,
And I do find, I think you already said this, that parents generally are more motivated when it comes to this and you're having this conversation. Again, if I'm making that dry eye analogy, if I'm speaking to an adult about the fact that they have dry eye and meibomian gland dropout and all this, if I compare the level of motivation for that patient then compared to the level of motivation a parent has when you talk about myopia, it's quite different.
Is it? Like,
parents of kids who are myopic or at risk of becoming myopic, those parents are like, tell me what you need. Tell me what we need to do. Let's do it. You know, extra testing, sure. You know, do we need to go upgrade our lenses to a different type of lenses or, try to think about these different treatments? There's always this, I found a much greater motivation and much more, they're much more likely to take you up on what you're suggesting compared to like a dry eye type of conversation. That's also one of the reasons why I like this space, is because people are like, they want to help their kids.
Yeah.
Right. They're going to listen to you at the very least when you're making these suggestions.
Yeah.
So it probably makes sense to structure it the way you're doing it, is what I'm kind of getting at, is maybe we don't need to have all of that data in front of us right away to state our case. We just need to say, here's what we see. People generally understand what nearsightedness is, even if the parents are not nearsighted.
Yeah.
Have the kids come back for that workup. Makes sense. I'm going to come back to the workup plus sort of follow-up structures and fee structures and kind of revenue of all of generation and all of that. Because I think that's an important thing to talk about too. A lot of colleagues wonder, is it worth my time and money?
Yeah.
Worth my time, and am I going to make money
by
going into this? But before we get into that, like, thinking about the treatment options that we have, you know, you mentioned you do ortho-K. We talk quite a bit about atropine now. Spectacle lens options. So the MyoSmart lens, you do a fair bit of that lens.
Yeah.
What I'm excited about there that I wanted to touch on a little bit here was the tech changes and the advancements in the technology. Now, it feels like these spectacle lens options just came out, but already there's like some new advancements coming out. And I wondered if you would just be comfortable talking about what's just come out. Okay, so we're recording on July 6th. So just like a month ago, Hoya came out with the MyoSmart Sun, I believe. They call it the MyoSmart Chameleon.
Yeah.
But they're going even beyond that now.
With a full sun. Yeah.
So I thought I'd let you go ahead and talk about that.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, even Polycarp has UV protection to it, but it is more just that comfort outdoors for kids. And parents do want transitions as well, or a transition option for their kids. So that's where the Chameleon is nice, that it gives you a lens that darkens outdoors. Again, some of those kids that are on atropine, you're usually, if they're symptomatic, you're adjusting the atropine or you're playing with it, but that's just one more thing to give you better success with it, or less likely to become symptomatic. Right. And yeah, definitely having the MyoSmart these past 3 years, parents have routinely asked, can we do this in a darkening lens? Is there a Sun RX option with this? Just because they want to know if it's available for their child and if they can do it. So it's exciting to have, and makes sense that when they launched it, they couldn't come up with everything all once. But now we're seeing, kind of these nice features that you can add to it if you'd like.
Yeah, the evolution of that technology is nice. So you're right. And that was a common thing, was like, let's say you have a -4, that kid is not going to be able to function without their glasses, right? Yeah. So if they're wearing sunglasses now, are they have prescription sunglasses that are not correcting the myopia.
Yeah.
If they're out all day or it's summertime, they're wearing the sunglasses a lot. Now you don't have that myopia correction or control aspect to it.
Yeah.
So now to have the Chameleon, which is that photochromic lens, and now B, the second thing that's coming out soon, the polarized option is going to be the next level of that options to offer to our patients. I think that's going to be really helpful.
Definitely.
All right. So if we are encouraging our colleagues to get into the myopia management space, one of the things that comes up, as I mentioned earlier, one of the things that my colleagues will push back on or ask about is, well, is this going to be profitable? Is it worth the time to put into adopting this new specialty in their office? Now, you know, we have to make sure anytime we go bring a specialty in, again, whether it's dry eye or myopia management, that we have some sort of structure around it. You already talked about the fact that you have children come back for their myopia workup, and then you expect to see them back a certain number of times for their follow-ups. And how do you set your fee structure to make sure that all of those visits are profitable, and that it's profitable for the office and for you to do all of that?
Yeah, so if we even go a step back from that, I'd say from how I got to where I am now, I was trying to do it all at the same time. So they'd be booked for a routine exam. You don't know what's coming. They end up being myopic.
Right.
And for those of you that have, started doing this, it's usually mom and dad. They've got lots of questions, or there's a lot to go over. So it was, you're running behind, it wasn't great for, so I had to, it wasn't working. My staff weren't happy. Yeah. You're getting stressed out as your day's running behind, that type of thing.
Gotcha.
So that's where we did change to a structure of, okay, we're going to bring this child back. And that has been helpful. You send mom and dad with some information, you kind of give them that quick kind of information of why this is important, why we need to do it. Then what happens, they do come back for that myopia assessment, is something that they do pay for. In Saskatchewan, where I am, we can bill for children's routine exams are covered, and some other, cycloplegic refraction, those types of things, small amounts that we can bill for.
Sure.
If we just did what we could bill for, kind of partials and cycloplegic refractions, the amount of time we spend with them, it wouldn't be profitable, as you compare it to, seeing an adult patient or that type of thing, that I think you would struggle to kind of make it work. So that's where we have an initial assessment fee that kind of covers that first assessment, where you're usually spending the most time with them. A nice part with sending them with information, usually they've gone through that a little bit, so you can kind of get into the treatment options a little bit more. That initial assessment will cover their testing, their axial length, topography, imaging, kind of what you need. And then that covers them for the year. So most kids, like we said, we kind of see every 6 months. So, it might be 3 visits in that first year. Some kids you might see more, just depending on how closely you need to watch them. But then there's an annual fee they pay that kind of, again, covers the testing that you need as you go forward. And each child's going to be different. You're going to need topography with ortho-K patients, every kid's getting axial length. Sometimes you're going to do imaging more often if you're kind of seeing things happen at the back of the eye. Yeah, but that's kind of how our structure works.
Gotcha. So there's an initial assessment fee. That fee covers the first year of follow-ups. And then every year after that, there's a
kind
different
of an
fee, which I imagine is a little bit lower.
Yeah, a little bit less than that initial first year.
And that covers all. And it will be no matter how many follow-ups they have. That's just a kind of a global fee.
Exactly,
for the year, whether it's 2 follow-ups or 6 follow-ups.
Yeah, and there's different structures out there that I know some offices do it that way, that you pay per axial length measurement or per time you're in the office.
Right, a more a la carte.
I feel like this has just made it easier, I guess, for, you know, kind of, I guess, simpler if you can for parents. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think it's every clinic, every doctor is going to find something that works well for them or better for them.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the things, the reason why I ask these questions is because this is sort of a new space for a lot of us, right?
And yeah.
Many of us are trying to figure out, how do I even approach this? How much should I charge? How do I even go about figuring out how much to charge, you know? And so just kind of getting it out there, and someone might listen to this and say, oh, that's different than how I'm doing it. Maybe I should try that. Or no, that's definitely not going to work in my office. I'll find something different.
Yeah. You know,
but it's a matter of having the conversation and getting the information out there. So that's really good to know. So I think personally, I'm listening to what you're saying here, Devin. I think that might be something that I need to adopt, is that, because I am often spending too much time in the exam room just on that initial comprehensive eye exam, you know, routine eye exam. I'm saying, okay, let's talk about myopia management. Let me tell you about all the options there are. And then,
it's too much
time. So maybe I need to set that fee for that initial assessment. I think that actually would be helpful.
Yeah.
And then making sure that when you are setting your fees for all the other follow-ups, that it is actually profitable. And something that is sort of a template that I've heard is, you know, if you see what your average revenue is going to be for like an adult eye exam,
yeah,
right? Look at your exam fee plus whatever glasses they might have purchased, what's that revenue going to be?
Yeah.
And then think about how much chair time these myopia follow-ups are going to take, and what equivalent of that adult
exactly.
eye exam is going
to be. Exactly. Try and average it out and get a rough idea.
So you know that you're at least not just breaking even, you're actually making
something. Yeah.
So we can continue to provide the care to our patients. So
you're going
to
stop doing it if you're losing money doing it and
right.
you're running behind and getting yourself stressed out. You're just going to stop altogether, right. which isn't what we want. So,
well, we don't want that, of course. Ultimately, we want to help these patients, but we have to make it sustainable for ourselves and our
exactly.
practice. So would you say, you know, in a yes or no way, that this is a profitable specialty for colleagues to bring in if it's done right?
Yes, definitely. It is, yeah. And I think not only that, it can be profitable in itself, but then also just that bond you build with that family, that they trust you, you're their optometrist, you're taking such good care of their children, parents are going to come see you. Word of mouth referrals in this is, you don't have to do marketing. They're sending,
right.
you know, everyone from that kid's sports team, from their activity to you to do it. It pays off, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, good to know. Actually, that word of mouth referrals is so important to grow your business, to grow your practice. So yes, if they're talking to their school friends or their teammates or the parents are talking to them, it's going to bring in new families to your
definitely.
Office, for sure. That's great. So before we wrap up, Devin, I was telling you, there's two questions I like to ask every guest before I wrap up. But before we get to that, any final words you want to share on myopia management to encourage our colleagues to kind of get into the space?
Yeah, it's... definitely, it's the standard of care. We know that we should be doing it. It's kind of the right thing to be doing for these kids. So definitely doing it yourself or referring is definitely okay if you know there's an office that sees a lot of myopes and then enjoy that area. And it is. It's an area that you can really enjoy. You get to see those kids lots. You get to see those families lots. So it's your, I don't know, you get to know them well. And it's been very,
it's kind rewarding.
Of rewarding, definitely. That's the word I'm looking for myself,
There's two things you just said there that I have to expand on. Number one, we forgot to say this right in the beginning, that part of that mindset shift is looking at myopia management as the standard of care, right? The same way we have that mindset shift to looking at myopia as an ocular disease now, myopia management is the standard of care. We have to think of that. Prescribing a pair of glasses is not the standard of care. You know, myopia management. So, and for me, myopia management is a kind of a broad concept of correcting the vision, prescribing the control, whatever this treatment is, but also talking about spending time outdoors.
Lifestyle things.
And what's this child, their lifestyle going to be like when they're an adult? And that's myopia management, looking at that overall long-term view for that patient. But the second thing was referring to your colleagues, right? And I think this is something that's really, really important for us, is that understanding, like, maybe myopia management isn't your thing. Fine.
Yeah.
But referring to your colleagues who do it, you know, somebody who is passionate about it, to make sure we're supporting our whole profession as a whole, strengthening our profession by letting our patients know that your colleague who has, you know, the same degree as you, that another optometrist can provide the services. We don't have to go to ophthalmology. We don't have to go to maybe somewhere else. Within optometry, we can take care of all of our patients and making those referrals. So I think it's a win-win. Our patients get the care they need. Our profession is strengthened by those referrals. And then we I think have a better relationship with our colleagues as well because of it. So Thanks for pointing that out. Okay, the last two questions I'd ask every guest are a bit personal, all right? I know we've been talking about clinical and like myopia management, but these are more personal. All right, number one, if you could hop in a time machine and go back to a point in your life, your career, when Devin was struggling with something, you're welcome to share that moment if you like, but more importantly, what advice would you give to Devin at that time?
Ooh, life or career?
Anything.
Either or.
Some point in your life that you were having a tough time. It could be work, it could be something else.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'd probably take myself back to school years and I'd say, get back in the library and get your head in those books would be...
I'd probably give myself similar advice. Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's good advice. Somebody out there needs to hear that. All right. The second question is, everything that you've achieved in your personal life and your career, how much of it would you say is due to luck and how much is due to hard work?
98% hard work, 2% luck.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got to work hard.
Yeah. Got to work hard. Yeah.
Love it. Great. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Devin. I appreciate you coming on. And before we wrap up, I should say thank you again to Hoya Vision Care Canada for supporting this episode. Again, this is part two of a four-part series that we're doing to discuss myopia management, hopefully encourage our colleagues to get into it and help our young patients. So thank you to Hoya Vision Care Canada for the support. Thank you, Devin, for
thanks for having me, Harvey.
It's been really good to get to know you over the last little while, and feel like we're almost like partners in crime in different parts of the country here, trying to get everybody on board to kind of get into myopia management. So thank you very much.
And thank you
to everybody who's watching and listening to the 2020 podcast, Canada's number one optometry podcast. I will see you guys in the next episode.